The Columbia Broadcasting System and its affiliated stations present Orson Welles and the Mercury Theater on the air in The War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells.
I never grow tired of this opening. It's one of the great moments in the history of radio. We are well into our second 100 years of radio now, yet this moment from October 30th, 1938, still stands out. The War of the Worlds is absolutely brilliant radio drama, performed by some of the most famous radio actors of the day. Drama with actors. It is not a prank, and it is certainly not fake news. I'm Paul Cross. This is Cross Talk, Media History, Commentary, and Analysis, Season 6, Episode 1. It's my custom now, around the time of World Audio Drama Day, to produce another episode that explores the brilliance of the Mercury Theater production of War of the Worlds from October 30th, 1938. There's a link to a compilation of the four previous episodes about it in the description box for this episode on the show site, Paul Cross Toronto's podcast on podbean.com. I think we've shattered the myth now, still perpetuated by less-informed teachers, that the show caused mass panic or mass hysteria. It did not. And even the lead researcher of the time admits that of the millions of people who heard the broadcast, perhaps thousands panicked. Others may have been excited. Yes, the research is flawed, biased, prejudicial, selectively quoted, and largely unread or misread. By my own analysis, there are at least 27 very clear indications the show is fiction. Even for people who tuned in late, for many about 15 minutes into the show when they bailed on a more established show on a competing radio network, there are at least 15 various obvious signs in the next 23 minutes. People who tuned in late were more likely to mistake the drama for something real. Up to half did nothing to try to determine whether it was something that was actually happening. But for the listener who does hear the show from the beginning, the signs are obvious, clear, and clearly indicated, beginning with that famous introduction and opening theme music. I want to point out a few of my other identified indications today. Right after that opening, a program announcer introduces one of the best-known radio actors of the day.
Ladies and gentlemen, the director of the Mercury Theater and star of these broadcasts, Orson Welles.
We know now that in the early years of the 20th century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's, and yet as mortal as his own.
Orson Welles plays two roles in the first part of the production. He appears as the narrator, as in the introduction, and within minutes, also appears as a character, a Professor Pearson. For the listener who hears the show from its opening, Welles as narrator gives an indication this is clearly fiction. He seems to be speaking as if he is looking back in time to the date of the broadcast, October 30th, 1938.
In the 39th year of the 20th century came the Great Disillusionment. It was near the end of October. Business was better. The war scare was over. More men were back at work. Sales were picking up. On this particular evening, October 30th, the Crosley Service estimated that 32 million people were listening in on radio.
After this passage by Welles as the narrator, we hear an actor portraying a radio announcer giving a weather forecast from the Government Meteorological Bureau rather than using a proper agency name and setting us up to hear music performed by Raymond Raquello and his orchestra, an unknown name. Fiction. Worse, perhaps, and I understand some of the studio musicians objected to this, they were to play deliberately, sloppily, off-tempo, even off-key. We're just 3.5 minutes into the show now, about to be told we're getting a news bulletin from Intercontinental Radio News, which the listener has never heard of before because it does not exist. The Mount Jennings Observatory in Chicago, referenced in the bulletin, does not exist. Just over 7 minutes in, we're introduced to Professor Pearson, very distinctly the voice of actor Orson Welles, and about 2 minutes later, a significant indication to listeners in Toronto, tuned to CFRB.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is the latest bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News, Toronto, Canada. Professor Morris of Macmillan University reports observing a total of 3 explosions on the planet Mars between the hours of 7:45 p.m. and 9:20 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This confirms earlier reports received from American observatories. Now, nearer home, comes a special bulletin from Trenton, New Jersey. It is reported that at 8:50 p.m., a huge flaming object, believed to be a meteorite, fell on a farm in the neighborhood of Grover's Mill, New Jersey, 22 miles from Trenton.
Listeners in Canada would know there was not and never has been a Macmillan University in Toronto. And the times are off here. For the bulk of listeners in eastern states and provinces, it's only about 10 minutes past 8. All right, none of this and several more signs are heard by listeners who tune in late. But even those who tune in around 4:15 the hour, tuning out the singing actor on the competing network, would hear this about 18 minutes past the hour. The actor playing reporter Carl Phillips is deliberately patterning his delivery after that of Herb Morrison of WLS, who overreacted and panicked while reporting 1 year earlier on the fire aboard the airship Hindenburg, which most passengers survived. But listen to the sound of the Martian spaceship here.
Professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. If those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute. Something's happening. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against a mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from that mirror and it leaps right at the advancing men. Strikes him head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Ah! The whole field's caught up by the woods, the barns, the gas tanks, and the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
That abrupt cutoff and silence are effective. Listeners do not expect to hear dead air. Oh, and you're right. The sound to signify the spaceship is an organ. We're now about 19 minutes into the broadcast. In the next 21 minutes before the only station ID in the show, there are about 14 more signs this is fiction, radio drama. This is not a prank. It's a cleverly written and nearly flawlessly performed radio drama. It's not fake news. Using actors to portray reporters was already common at the time, in other radio dramas and comedies, in movies, in stage plays. It's the moment in radio history that inspires an event today. October 30th, the anniversary of the broadcast, is known as World Audio Drama Day. It occurs to me today, I don't know much about writings by radio reviewers of the time or researchers in defense of the Mercury Theater's War of the Worlds. Maybe I'll find some by next time, because I am still far from finished with exploring the War of the Worlds. This is Crosstalk. I'm Paul Cross. I study and I teach podcasting and radio.